Hey, cashiers. We Have the Receipts podcast is coming at you live from Netflix is a Joke Fest in Los Angeles.
Chris, are you kidding?
No, Netflix is a joke, Courtney, but this is not one of them. Our listeners in LA have the chance to join us for a live recording of our podcast, We Have the Receipts, hosted by me, Chris Burns.
And me, Courtney Revolution.
Join us and a few surprise guests from your favorite Netflix reality shows on Saturday, May 4th at 1 p.m. at a secret location in Hollywood.
To be announced.
Get your tickets for the We Have the Receipts live show at tudum.com/WHTR. That's Tudum, TUDUM.com/WHTR.
Tickets are limited. If you can't make it to the show, we still want to hear your beautiful voice. Leave us a message at speakpipe.com/WeHaveTheReceipts.
You may even hear your own voice on the show.
Grab a ticket at tudum.com/WHTR.
And we'll see you on May 4th in Los Angeles. Bye, cashiers.
Welcome to Present Company, the Netflix podcast that brings you dynamic conversations with exceptional people behind your favorite series, films, documentaries, and specials. I'm your host, Krista Smith. For years, I was Vanity Fair's ambassador to Hollywood, interviewing countless actors as well as creatives and authorities across the spectrum. My passion is talent, any form of it. How do you know you have it? How do you cultivate it? How do you protect it? And also, I want to get to the heart of what drives it. On this podcast, I'll be talking to people in Hollywood and far beyond. Thank you for joining me. Zoe Deutsch's career began a decade ago on the Disney Channel. Now, of course, she's one of Hollywood's most sought-after young talents. This fall, she has two major projects. The first, The Politician, is the much-discussed new Ryan Murphy show starring Ben Platt, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Jessica Lange. Then, switching gears entirely, Deutsch has Zombieland, Double Tap, which stars Emma Stone and Woody Harrelson. It's a full plate for a 24-year-old, but the reality of a working life in Hollywood is not exactly a new concept. Her mother, Leah Thompson, is the actress known for the Back to the Future trilogy and the sitcom Caroline in the City. And her father, Howard Deutsch, directed some of the great John Hughes movies of the 80s, including Pretty in Pink and Some Kind of Wonderful. In fact, Zoe will tell you she took her first steps on a movie set. In this conversation, we talk about growing up in the Valley, going all out for auditions, her struggles with anxiety, and her thoughts on the Cobb salad. Zoe Deutsch looking exceptionally chic on an average Wednesday in Hollywood. Just took her shoes off for those listeners that cannot see. I love what you're wearing. I always love what you're wearing, actually. You have such a great sense of style.
Thank you. I always love what you're wearing. And you, for listeners out there, Krista's wearing a beautiful floral long dress, effortlessly chic. We got a gold necklace on. And a nude heel.
Yeah, and I would be lying if I say I didn't dress up for you today, because I knew you would be bringing it. And I was like, well, I can't wear my denim today.
My inspiration for this look was like going to Temple in the 1960s or something. Mm-hmm. Also, really quick disclaimer. It's the Jewish New Year today, and you're supposed to fast, and I have been fasting, so my brain is not in the most tip-top shape. So good luck to you, Krista, and good luck to me, and good luck to the listeners.
Yeah. All right. So, Zoe, you and I have met. I was trying to think this morning where you first got my attention. And obviously it was when I was at Vanity Fair and I put you in one of the portfolios and I just like fell in love with you then, and your face, your talent, your personality. It just kept getting better and better. And now you're doing so much at Netflix, which is exciting. But have you always wanted to perform?
Yes. Always.
Do you remember that moment when you were a kid that was like, that's what I'm going to do?
I remember my mom being almost shocked at how invested I was in my Barbies and the stories that I created and how involved I got. You know, as an adult, thinking about kid me crying over Barbie being down on her luck and the Barbie dream Jeep or whatever it was being broken down and Ken coming to fix it and tears coming down my 3-year-old eyes. Like, you know, it's funny to think about that, but I think my mom recognized that that I had this performative nature from a very, very young age. And yeah, I think I've, oh, it's, I get to do what I've always wanted to do, and I'm doing it now, which is so, so cool.
It's so cool. Are you kidding? I mean, you have like done so many movies and so much stuff in such a short amount of time.
But I've yet to actually cry over Barbie's dream Jeep being broken down in a movie. So gotta manifest that shit.
You're going to have to make that happen. I should say, for your mother being Lea Thompson, obviously, in so many great films of her own, must have been, I'm curious, so this is kind of a question, terrified or exhilarated that she knew she had a daughter that really wanted to get into acting?
I think my mom was exhilarated. My dad was terrified.
And your dad is a director.
Yeah.
He did all those great John Hughes movies that informed my entire childhood, by the way. Pretty in Pink, Some Kind of Wonderful. I mean, come on. That's like...
Yeah. And he's an amazing dad. And I don't think an amazing dad ever wants to see their daughter suffer. And as a director of a billion and a half years, I think he knew what it, you know, he'd seen so many actresses have painful experiences. So he didn't want that for his child. And it's not that he discouraged me, but I think he was that. There was a sigh with the, okay.
Like, I kind of knew it, but I can't believe it.
Yeah. And there was a moment when maybe I was going to be in textiles. I loved design. Like, I loved drawing patterns, and I was maybe going to do that. And then I thought, well, I like to debate, and I was in speech and debate. Maybe I'll be a lawyer. And he was like, yeah, be a lawyer. And then he ended up with my sister, who went to college for jazz music, and a daughter who essentially dropped out of high school to be an actress. So didn't get a doctor, didn't get a lawyer.
That's so funny, but that's so true. That's the way it happens, right?
Did your parents feel like, growing up, did you feel like your parents had an idea of what they wanted you to be, or were they ever disappointed with a career path that you took?
Well, I was lucky in that sense, because I had a really overachieving older sister and an older brother. So I was kind of, well, whatever she does will be just fine. The black sheep. I was definitely not good in math, and they were excellent at math. So,
do you think that plays a big part in it, though? When your older sibling is great at something, don't you think that immediately makes you not want to excel at that thing?
Partially. And also, I think a lot has to do with birth order. You know, I do think like the oldest takes the biggest brunt of parents' expectations or failed achievements. Mm. I do think that happens. So being the youngest, I probably got the least of that. It's like, you know,
throw
the first pancake out. By the time you get to the one at the end, you're like, ah, it's fine, whatever. You know, it's like that kind of thing. And you have an older sister, right?
Yeah. I do. Yeah.
Right. So I do think birth order plays into it. But did you find that being the child of recognizable names and very prolific, you know, you were basically born on the set of Caroline in the City, right? Weren't you like a baby,
popped
right?
Popped out so, on a sitcom stage. No one's surprised about that. Yeah. My personality.
Did you feel like it was, you had to prove yourself more, or did you feel like it was double-edged? Like you got in maybe quicker, but it was harder for you, or none of it, it's all the same?
No, it's definitely not all the same. And being able to pick up via osmosis so many things that you can't really teach a person. They just kind of have to experience, witness, like rejection, like the volume of rejection that you need to be able to take and withstand as an actor. I wasn't shocked or hurt or confused by it because I grew up in it. Mm-hmm. So that is a huge privilege and an advantage. People I grew up with, not being super intimidated by people who have power and fame or money, understanding that they're humans, like that wasn't instilled in my being from the get-go. So that's another privilege and an advantage. And then there are things like yesterday I was auditioning for something. Oh God, I had a terrible audition, but really bad audition. I think things were going well in my life, and then of course something has to come and even it out, your ego out. Horrifying audition, to the point where I was so I'm going on a tangent, but I woke up this morning, literally my chest is beating so fast. Like my first thought was, did I kill someone yesterday? Like I was, there was so much shame and regret that I had. But anyway, yesterday I went I had an audition and my friend was auditioning and his dad is the producer and he's definitely not going to get the part. And he's perfect for the part and he's not going to get the part because the studio and the director are like, no, we can't give it. He's definitely not going to get it. And he's brilliant and perfect for it. And I'm not saying that that necessarily happened to me, but I do think that there are, like you said, it's a double-edged sword, but understanding the psychology or having the opportunity to experience the like the actual true, the core, the roots of what this job entails from the beginning of my life has been very obviously helpful for me. I don't know if that makes any sense or if my fasting brain is wandering.
No, it does make a lot of sense, actually. Like, and another thing I know about you is you love to audition. You've talked about that. You actually love that process. And most actors hate to audition. What is it that you love about that experience?
Today I hate it because right. I'm so embarrassed about yesterday. What are you talking about, girls? I fucking hate auditioning.
Yeah.
No. Okay. As an actor, I mean, I'm still in class, acting class, and I still have my teachers and I still do that stuff. But other than class and other than if I book a job, I don't get to act. Right. My job is acting and I don't actually get to do my job that much. And it's a muscle like anything else. So auditioning is an opportunity to exercise that muscle and to get out there and be vulnerable and do your job. And I think it's important, you know, facing your fears and failing and all the stuff that comes with the territory. Mm-hmm. And also sometimes it feels like an acting class, like a great acting class. Like if you get to audition for a great director, I got to audition for Spielberg once and it was one of my favorite acting classes I wasn't upset when I didn't get the job because I was like, I have something no one can ever take away from me. That part was never mine to begin with. And I think that's also, there is a spiritual element too, which is that if you don't get something, it was never yours to begin with. And it's also none of your business what other people think about you. Like I think, but it's also psychotic, the idea that you have to care about something more than anything in the world. And then once you do it, let it go. It's like, huh? What is that? No wonder we're all crazy.
You went to the LA version of Fame, right? The yeah. Laxa, what's it called?
Laxa.
Right. How was that being around all these other drama nerds as your own drama nerd yourself and like as a middle school? What is it?
It was a high school.
High
yeah.
school. Okay.
Really cool because I was around a bunch of teenagers with purposive behavior. They had a purpose. They had a drive. They had a want, a need, something other than going to a party or getting a dude or getting a girl or there's an energy and like and it's very contagious to be it's as an adult of course the same thing it's contagious to be around a bunch of people who are like let's do it, let's get out there and follow our dreams and go for it and work our asses off, and if they say no we'll say okay and keep going. Like that is it was an invaluable experience for sure. And it's cool to see my peers flourish. Like there are some people I went to high school with that are amazing artists that are succeeding. And it's so neat to feel like, I don't know, that we came from the same place.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're back in high school with one of your projects, The Politician, which Ryan Murphy's new show for Netflix. And you play such an incredible character, right? And also one that's not typical for you. Like I would have thought that you would have played the more kind of traditional pretty girl in high school, for lack of a better word, maybe the ingenue or the conniving mm-hmm. ingenue. And you don't. You play Infinity Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And
her middle name is Maybelline because my dog's name is Maybelline.
Where that tattoo is really true. You do have a tattoo. I will say it is true. She does have a tattoo of her dog on her leg. But that's almost off, you know, that would be against typecasting for you.
Yeah.
How did that part come to be?
Yeah. So no, and I did get sent originally when I got sent the script, it was for that character that you're talking about. And I very kindly said, you know, I don't think this is for me to audition for. And then I got a call from Ben Platt. Who I had auditioned for a movie he was doing 6 months prior. And I
should interrupt right now and just tell our listeners that Ben Platt won a Tony for Dear Evan Hansen, and he's also the star of The Politician.
I had auditioned for a movie he was doing 6 months prior, and I didn't get the part, but like life is so amazing in that way. If you just keep going, no doesn't mean no. No can mean something way cooler than you ever thought it meant or thought it was going to mean. Again, I'm sorry my words are jumbled. No, I am not drunk. I mean, maybe just a little drunk. No, I'm just fasting for the Jewish holiday today. But no, and what happened was we had a really special experience and connection in that audition, genuinely. And as a result of that, he thought of me for Infinity. And he said, have you read the pilot for Infinity? I was like, oh, no, I thought that was off the card. I didn't know that was open. And he said, yeah. And I read it again and I thought, oh, okay, no, now I get it. And I begged Ryan Murphy to read me. And it was even more complicated than I even thought at the time. But before Ryan, it's not like I had an offer for the part. I was begging for the part, even just to audition for the part. But my dates didn't work at all. I was in pre-production on a movie that I was producing that I'd been working on for a year and a half. We had just signed the lease to get the offices, and I was like, I'm not going to disappoint all these people. And I had to sign a contract even to audition. So I had to send Ryan a letter, being like, I know you don't even know me. I know you don't even really necessarily want me, but can I audition for this? And can I come a month late into shooting? So he's amazing. He let me audition, and then they got the part, and he let me do my movie that I was producing and starring in called Buffaloed. And then I came a month into shooting and I shot all my stuff out of order. But thank you to Ben Platt. Thank you to Ryan Murphy.
Did you, for your audition, did you put on a skull cap? Because you have cancer. I say that in quotation marks, but you are in a bald cap, I would assume, right? Because you're going through chemo and that's part of this character's narrative. How did you approach that audition?
I always go balls out for auditions. I love dressing up crazy and going for it. And depending on the director, I think it's case by case. Sometimes you'll walk in as a character, sometimes you won't. You know, it depends on the situation. But with this one, I knew I needed to really, it's a very transformative part. So I knew I needed to, come in there fully as the character. So I didn't have a bald cap, but I had, because I came straight from the plane, I had like a beanie on, like to hold my hair up. And I wore a fleece, like Hanukkah sweater from Target, and my own baby blanket I carried, and a bag of like markers and like drawing stuff, pajama pants, and then like two layers of socks and really comfortable shoes. And I wore a sports bra. I always feel like for me, shoes and undergarments are the most important part of a character in terms of like wardrobe. Because if you think, I mean, even the way now, like the way that I had to take my shoes off to feel comfortable. The way your body moves has so much to do with how you feel connected to the earth and how you feel connected to your body, which, you know.
It's your breath and the.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Anyway, I went in like that. And I went in with a much stronger of a voice, much stronger of a lisp, much stronger of a high-pitched baby voice. You know, Infinity has been infantilized her whole life by her grandmother and caretaker, played by Jessica Lange.
Wait for it. Yeah.
And so I wanted it, everything. I wanted her voice. I wanted her appearance. I wanted her everything to feel childlike. Because that's all she knows. And once I got the part, we sort of worked on all that and worked on the voice and worked on everything. But I was very nervous to watch the show because I didn't do one bit of ADR. That's how amazing the sound department was on this show. No ADR. So I was like, and we were always changing and working on the voice.
And ADR is when you go back and like...
Audio dialogue replacement. So Most things, to put into context, most movies, most shows, half of the audio you hear is honest, or maybe a quarter, I should be more fair. A quarter of the dialogue that you hear is re-recorded in a booth. Mm-hmm. Just because of if there was a plane or if there was a car or if you touched your chest or whatever, sound is super complicated. And anyway, I didn't get a chance to fix any of it, so I felt nervous, but because we were always changing it.
How was being with Jessica Lange? She obviously plays your grandmother in it. You have a lot of scenes together. What is she like?
She's a trip. She's so fun. She's very cool. She's a brilliant artist, an amazing photographer. If you haven't checked out her work, I keep plugging it in the hopes that maybe I'll get a print of one of her photographs. And because I'm literally one of her biggest fans in that aspect as well, of course, her acting. I felt this way, but I get to now say that she felt this way, too, because I read an interview where she said this. But I felt so, and I feel giddy talking about it because I felt like we really connected. As friends and as artists, we really got each other. And you don't always have that experience, mm-hmm. of course. Then it wouldn't be special if mm-hmm. it was every time. But and we have a similar process, actually. I mean, of course, hers is much more, much better. But we do. Like, we clicked. We got it. It was like sparring is the only way to, like, acting with her is like sparring. She's such a fun actor. I had a blast with her. Mm-hmm. That was one of the, it was just fun to act with her. I don't know.
Yeah, she's been amazing in all the stuff she's done with Ryan Murphy. It's just, like, so great. Like, that partnership and the parts that he's given to her and where she takes them. It's just been so, as an audience member, it's so fun to watch.
For me, it was fun to watch how they worked together and how they changed and created Dusty. They have a very unique relationship and dialogue, and I firmly believe there'll be possibly a Netflix movie about them one day.
How was your working relationship with Ryan?
You know, I had never worked with him before. I don't even think I'd ever met him until the audition. And one of the things that I think is super interesting about him is he doesn't talk about stuff. He just does stuff. So he's not like, hey, Zoe, can you sing? Or, hey, Zoe, will you sing? It's, oh, okay, everyone just got the script, me and the grips and the makeup, everyone got the script at the same time, and I am singing. And there's something super, super, super amazing about that, because I think it's why he's been able to do what he does. He's a doer. He just does it. Mm-hmm. And you want to rise to the occasion. You want to meet him at his level. You want to show up for someone who has shown up for you. And it can be confusing at times because you're like, I don't even know where this came from or how this happened or what, you know. But it's a very, very cool, amazing world, his world. I think he believes in people before they believe in themselves, too, ultimately. Like mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Well, speaking of singing, you do have a song in The Politician that you get to do with Ben Platt. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about that. It's from Assassins, a Sondheim song.
Unworthy of Your Love.
Unworthy of Your Love. How was that to, one, see that in the script that day and then to do it and be with Ben? And did you love every second of that?
I love singing so much. And to kind of go back to what we were talking about with, you were saying your older siblings, or they were great at math. And you weren't?
Yeah.
My sister is an unbelievable singer. My mother is an unbelievable singer. Some of my earliest memories are drawing and helping my mom draw her bruises on her arm when she was doing Sally Bowles on Cabaret. Mm-hmm. My grandmother was a brilliant singer. My grandpa was a jazz drummer. My whole music is very embedded in my family's DNA, and particularly with my sister. And I, as a younger sibling who couldn't compete, just didn't try. But also, you know, you get older and you go, it's not about competing. There can be more than one. But I've always loved singing. It's always made me so happy. I think it's the most extraordinary, purest form of art, of showing somebody your soul. And it's why I think it's the quickest way to make someone feel something is a song. And getting to sing with Ben was the best. He's mm-hmm. one of the greatest singers alive. And he was like, it was just fun. Yeah.
Looked like it was fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about your other big movie, Zombieland Double Tap, with Emma Stone and Woody Harrelson. This is we don't call things a sequel, but this is basically 10 years later, right? And you play another character, another kind of Barbie-esque character, right? Was that safe to say?
Did I ever play a Barbie?
No, you didn't, but it's a little bit of your Barbie in there, right? Potentially?
More like my Valley Girl roots. I'm. If you don't know, or if you haven't heard me say a billion times, I'm from, born and raised in the Valley, and I do my best to hide that accent. But so yes, it's a sequel to Zombieland. Everybody, all the OGs came back: Woody Harrelson, mm-hmm. Emma Stone, Jesse Eisenberg, Abigail Breslin, the original director Ruben Fleischer, and 10 years later, they're still living in the zombie apocalypse, and they come across new survivors, one of them being Madison, my character, who I basically get to live out all my Valley Girl tendencies. She's in a pink velour Juicy Couture tracksuit. She's got a bedazzled sidekick that she's constantly searching for service with, even though it's a zombie apocalypse. Yeah. And that was the most fun experience I've ever had at work, making that movie. They're the best. You know them all. They're really cool people.
Yeah. Now you go off and do a bunch of crazy stuff after you act as well. Like what I love about your choices is I feel like you're determined to be a well-rounded, interested, and interesting human being. Mm. And part of that, I think, is your travel. You put yourself out of your comfort zone. You go to these, I mean, you did some things for Netflix. Obviously, you went to Africa and you've done other things. But where did that come about? Have you always had a little bit of a wanderlust, or is it deliberate to expand your horizons? Like, take me through a little bit of that choices, because that stuff isn't easy to do.
Oh, thank you. First and foremost, I think I'm a very curious person. I've always been, to my own detriment. I was a very annoying child, and I'm reminded of that by adults all the time in my life. Very curious person, so I'm curious about other people. That's why I do what I do. That's why I want to play these weird parts like Infinity and Madison. I want to ask them questions. I want to know what it's like to live like them. That's why I think actually, anyway, no, I'm going to go on a tangent. Very curious, so that's part of the reason why I think I love to adventure and travel. And also, my job as an actor is to understand and to see other walks of life and other types of humans and see other things other than a movie studio and a makeup trailer and my fancy shoes. And if you get stuck in that repetitive cycle, which is not to say I'm not grateful for all the things that I have, because I am, but if you get stuck in that, you start to lose the humanity of it all, which is what it is to begin with. You know, we're just humans relating to humans, and that's all acting is. It's just like trying to understand what it's like to be another human being. And finally, how boring would it be if I was just an actor? Because then all I could do is talk about acting and myself, and I refuse to be an uninteresting person.
Well, it is. It's like you have to be both interested and interesting, right? That's kind of the flow of it. I also think something that is really powerful that you've done is you've talked about mental health and anxiety and stuff that you had as a kid and how you worked through it. And I love that you're open about that, because everybody has gone through something like that. And for someone like you and with this platform to say, oh, yeah, me too, which I think would be hard for people when they look at you, they think, oh, my God, how could she ever have been bullied, or how could she ever have anxiety? You know, and I love that you've been open about that.
As a Jewish Los Angelino, I wish I could say thank you. That's all me. I mean, it's like I grew up, if you didn't have a therapist, they were like, what's wrong with you? I guess the rest of the world is like, if you do have a therapist, they're like, what's wrong with you? Like, yeah. I have the version of it where it's like, you're not talking about all here. So I appreciate that. But no, I like came out of the womb with anxiety, to the point where it's kind of comical in hindsight, but I had a disorder called fainting baby disorder where I would hold my breath. I think I did it for years, and my poor parents were like this, because it also, your body shouldn't be able to do that. It's like you're defying all the laws of the human body. So I just came out like that. I came out with tons of anxiety, and I'm so grateful to my parents for nurturing that. And I remember one time, and maybe it's a little bit of a harsh thing to say, but I was having a panic attack. Maybe it's a harsh thing to say, but I'm very grateful for it, and I think about it all the time. I was having a panic attack about a work assignment. Like, I was obsessed with school. I was like total teacher's pet. I was having a full panic attack, couldn't breathe, couldn't see, that kind of thing. And my mom like grabbed my shoulders and she said, it only gets harder than this. You have to figure out how to handle this. And I'm grateful for that, because it kind of makes me feel clumped thinking about it. Because even now, when I want to be upset about this stupid audition yesterday, if I want to do the things that I want to do in my life, I got to get through it. Like, you got to get through it. And it seems like a harsh piece of advice, I know. And sometimes it's more helpful to be gentle. And she was. But moments like that, I remember and I'm very grateful for. because it did snap me out of it. And it doesn't mean that I don't have the space or the love or support to feel anxious. It's that let's work through it. Let's talk about it. Let's pinpoint what it actually is. And then let's move on. Let's find mm-hmm. a way to, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It does get harder.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I want to have kids one day.
It's so simple, but I'm listening. I'm just taking it in. And I'm like, wow, she's 100% right. It just does get harder. Doesn't get easier. And that's, I would say, too, with even acting, like it all gets harder. You know, the parts get more complicated, the stakes get more complicated, you know, and I always repeat this all the time to actors and to people I work with, like patience is an action sometimes. Mm-hmm. And in these jobs, and particularly in Hollywood, it's in Hollywood, using, as I say that in quotes, you know, the business of arts and entertainment. It's complicated. It is a roller coaster. It gets harder and harder and harder the more successful you get, oddly. You know, it's not one of those things where you're hugely successful. Now you can coast. The fun is almost in the climb up, or the journey to that elusive, whatever brass ring is for you. That's where the fun is had. Once you're there, it's kind of panic. How do you sustain it? How do you not make a false move? Well, do you know all that stuff that goes into it? It's madness. It's like crazy making.
Madness. Absolute madness. I don't know how people do it. Yeah. I do not know how people do it when they come from nothing and they are the biggest star in the world and it happened out of one movie and they've never seen or done. I don't know how people do that or mm-hmm. keep their head. I have no idea. It seems insane. Mm-hmm. You know, like these child actors who are like, do one show and they're, I can't imagine.
Mm-hmm. Well, your generation too deals with such different privacy issues and social media, and you're awesome on social media. I love, and I follow you.
And if you don't, you're the worst.
My God, my Valley, I tried.
You're like killing it. You're totally crushing it, Krista.
I would love to do a podcast entirely in the Valley.
And like, vocal fry. It's so fun to listen to. And now half of the audience has tuned out because who wants to listen to this?
I need to like twirl your hair. I don't even know what I was saying. But your social media, do you feel a certain obligation to do that, or is it just part of your being?
I kind of in some ways like it. And I, you know, which is an unpopular opinion. Sometimes it doesn't feel like a burden. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's fun for me. It's very calming and peaceful to edit like the colors on photos. Mm-hmm. It feels very, like a lot of my friends will just send me their photos for me to mess around mm-hmm. with them because it's very calming, some sort of OCD thing. But then sometimes it sucks. And yeah. I'm like, why do I do this? And what's the point? And who cares? And I'm like, do I really need to do this at all?
I agree with you. Sometimes I like the way it connects
yeah.
things and connects people in the most positive sense. But I get the negative sense. But like, I love seeing what you're doing.
And I know, and I love, same with you. I feel yeah. like when I see you, it's not like I'm like, oh, I haven't seen you in 4 months. Like, yeah. oh, what's going on? Yeah, yeah. When you went last weekend, it's yeah. like, I like that feeling. Mm-hmm. But then there are elements of it that are kind yeah. of a bummer.
Yeah. All right. What's your Thanksgiving going to look like this year?
Okay. Thanksgiving this year. Well, I don't know because I don't know where I'm going to be. I don't know.
Let's say you're in LA. You're in the Valley. What's that going to be like? Like how many people? Do your parents still have all the rescue animals and the chickens and the goats and everything?
Yes. It's always at the Deutsch household. Actually, after this, I'm rushing home to help cook the Yom Kippur feast. Mm-hmm. Breaking the fast. So that'll be at my parents' house. And it always is. And it's always insanity. It's always, you know, because there's a billion dogs and a billion people. And like whoever doesn't have a place to go on Thanksgiving comes to the Deutsch household, which is the best. And I grew up like that. I grew up with people always like living in the whatever. If they were coming in to shoot a movie, that's just how my mom and dad are. So I have no idea. It'll be chaotic and it'll be fun. And I'll try to not get in a fight with anyone.
Like I said, I love at the top of this interview, I love your fashion. I always love your choices. Do you just have a lot of fun with that?
I do. I work with Elizabeth Stewart, mm-hmm. who's a wonderful human being and style expert. And I love she has a really, I love that she loves fashion with a sense of humor. Like, I always feel like I see that. And she dresses Kate Blanchett. And I feel like I there's always like a, sometimes like a wink or a nod or a having fun with it. Mm-hmm. And I tend to, as you can see here, steer a little bit more conservative. I don't know why that is, but I do. But I try to have fun, and I try to have Elizabeth push me more in the fun Kate Blanchett direction.
Mm-hmm. It's great. She's been doing a good job. I like it.
I love fashion. I mean, it is ultimately like a huge part of my job too, and it's such a freeing experience when you get to dress up and be somebody else for a night, for a week, for a month. So I love it. I love it. I think it's cool. I also have aspirations of maybe one day doing stuff like that as a job as well.
Well, I always ask everybody these four questions. Okay. So there's no wrong answer. You don't have to think about it too much. But
by you saying that, now I feel like there's definitely a wrong answer. No. And I am not thinking about it.
No, they're just like, you know, one of them is, what are you eating? But I know you're not eating anything today. But I love, people always have such quirks about like the food trends they're into or not into, or paleo, or I'm only eating meat or whatever. I don't even know the differences of. So that's one of the questions. But
In general, well, I was a vegetarian for 8 years, and I had to start eating meat because I was training for a movie where I was doing a lot of stunts, and my body wasn't able to keep up. And when I started eating meat, I realized it's not that the eating meat thing was upsetting me. It was the volume, like the how much meat I was eating. So I really try my best to, you know, I'll eat chicken and I'll have fish and I'll do that. But I really try my best not to have a lot of it. I also don't think our bodies are meant to digest mm-hmm. five animals in one salad. Like mm-hmm. a Cobb salad's insane. I mean, we're literally insane. We're having like pig, cheese with cow. Then we're like, we're going to have chicken, and then we're going to add turkey. It's like, you don't need to have five animals in one
Cobb salad.
Cobb salad,
P.S., most popular item on any menu.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah.
You don't need that.
I never thought of it that way.
It's bizarre.
All right. What are you listening to?
What am I listening to? You know, because I've been on this press tour for a long time for both things. I really am just wanting to listen to things that just make me smile and I can sing along to. And it's Ariana Grande and Lizzo. Oh,
Ariana Grande. Love them both.
They just make me happy.
All right. What's the last thing you read, or what are you currently reading?
Okay. I'm reading Fleischman Is in Trouble. But the last thing I read was Where the Crawdads Sing. And before that, Three Women. And before that, A Little Life. I am obsessed with all those books that I read. They're amazing. I haven't finished Fleischman, but I've heard amazing things. What are you reading?
I read the news.
God, I'm so sorry. What's that like?
I read the news, and I'm currently reading She Said.
Oh, I have that. I'm so excited.
It's really good. It reads like almost like a thriller. It's really, really well done.
I'm really looking forward to reading that.
And you're a voracious reader. Obviously, you must be reading a lot. Do you read on like before you go to bed?
Yes. I love reading. Mm-hmm. I'm not the best watcher. I'm not a cinephile, basically, embarrassingly enough.
Well, that's great, because that was going to be my next question.
Oh, shit.
What's
SpongeBob.
What's the last thing you, like, binge-watched?
I rewatched the two Fire Festival documentaries. Mm-hmm. One of them is on Netflix. You can listen to and watch right now.
I love that. By the way, I watched it on Netflix, and I watched the whole thing, and then I watched it all over again. Like,
that's what I'm saying. I literally rewatched it recently, both of them again, because I watched them the day they came out, both of them when they came out, and then I had to rewatch.
Embarrassingly, I did it in the same sitting. I just couldn't get over. I only watched the Netflix one, and I just couldn't get over it. I was just like, oh my God, I had to see it again.
The Netflix documentaries are my favorite. I love nonfiction. I love documentaries. I love anything that tells the truth, because right now I feel like everyone's lying to us, Krista.
I know.
Speaking of the news.
I know. It's terrible. But I love seeing you, Zoe. Thank you so much. On that note, everyone's lying to us, except for us. We're telling the truth here. They're hardcore truth. You can take it or leave it, but it's the truth, damn it.
I love you. Thank you for having me.
I always love catching up with you.
You're the best.
You're the best.
There you are.
You are. All right. I'll see you again soon.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, babe.
Bye.
Thanks so much for joining me.
The Politician is streaming now on Netflix.
Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you've been listening. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Krista Smith. Join me next time for more meaningful conversations here at Present Company.